Joining us now from somewhere near Heartland where it's pouring like it is here is Al Batt. Good morning, Al.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, everyone. I thank you all for making me a part of your day. Yeah, it is really coming down here. Yeah. My desk is just a catastrophe. It's like a tornado went through or perhaps a hurricane. What did I ever do or what did humans ever do before they had Post-it notes? I just have them everywhere. They're so handy and... I can't imagine that how anybody could have ever been the king of England without Post-it notes. Maybe they just wrote it on one of the serfs or something that came in there. But these things are just glorious. Usually when I'm finding wonderful things, it's something outside in nature. But once in a while, the wonderful things are right at your fingertips. So I just want to say a shout out to Mr. Post-it, if he's listening out there somewhere, because he makes my life a little bit easier. And boy, hey, thanks to everybody at the Waseca County Corn and Soybean Producers. We met at the Ward House in Waseca, which is a craft brewery thing with a pizza, Pepito's Pizza at one end, so everything was good. And thanks to everybody at the Rotary District 5580 Conference that was held in Fargo, North Dakota. And I wonder if there's a Fargo otherwhere. I probably didn't need to add North Dakota to that. And also to everyone at the Red Rock Center in Fairmont. Thank you all for listening to me, Bloviate. I appreciate you. There's a birdie with a yellow bill hopped up on my suet feeder and cocked his shining eye and said, I'm eating, I came up with this fine spread quickly that doesn't really rhyme very well with said, but whatever you can find for a word in there. Because with apologies to Robert Louis Stevenson, there are days when starlings dominate my suet feeder. There are starling-resistant suet feeders. Upside-down suet feeders are meant to challenge starlings, and they do lessen that bird's presence, but starlings can hang upside down and feed. I took a bunch of photos. For a starling, it's going to the gym. You get a little workout, and then you eat lunch, so they get it all done at one. They figure it out. Starlings are smart birds. They know how to get on there. The one thing I found a suet feeder that will keep starlings out are those with, if you cage a suet feeder, so you put a cage around it with small openings. But the problem there is I have red-bellied woodpeckers, I have hairy woodpeckers that feed on that suet, and it kicks them out too. So it'll allow in the downy and anything smaller. So downies and chickadees get in there and eat, which is pretty cool, but I'll keep hanging this one up and hope it works. I hope the starlings, as time goes on, they get tired of working out every day, seeing how many pull-ups they can do or chin-ups or whatever you call. But, man, they just fly on it, and they hang by, like, one toe from each foot, and then they hammer away at the suet. And, of course, our buddies are down on the ground. They knock suet down, and the buddies are down there eating that. So life is good if you're a starling. We heard Karen from Jennifer and Lily mm-hmm. asked about bird aging. They said, do birds get gray feathers? Do they get arthritis? Do they lose their memories? I can't ever recall meeting a bird who looked or acted old. Thank you. And Lily also wants to know if birds eat bees. So I'm going to talk about birds in the wild, because I've raised chickens and ducks and geese and guinea fowl, and they do get to the point, because these were pets more than anything, and they would get to the point where they kind of act old. They slow down, and they just aren't as involved as they normally are. And so they do. You kind of see it in some of those birds. But in the wild, most birds will never reach an age that would be considered old enough to go gray. So is the reason that it's rare to spot a gray bird is because they don't live that long? It's not. Scientists have discovered that birds don't go gray because their feathers aren't only colored with pigments. Light bounces off protein in their feathers in different wavelengths to produce this variety of colors in birds. And as birds get older, they can control changes in the nanostructures of their feathers to ensure they don't go gray and they're still able to recognize each other, because they see in a different color spectrum than we do, and that's how a blue jay male can tell which one's a blue jay female, because they look different. And I'm sure it's with chickadees. They look the same to us, but if we are seeing it through a chickadee's eyes, you have no problem telling that's a female because they look a different color. So as birds get older, I should add, if you see a graying bird with patches of light-colored feathers, it's likely that's due to old age, or likely, unlikely that it's due to old age. And it's probably leucism, a leucistic bird, and it's an abnormality in the feathers that occurs due to a genetic mutation. So it's not getting old. Arthritis, however, is a common problem for older birds. I talk to folks who have pet birds every so often, and that's a concern to them for their pets. They particularly in relation to older injuries. So if we have, we pick up an injured red-tailed hawk, we run it up to the Raptor Center, and they nurse it back to health because that's what they do up there. They're wonderful at it. And then you let that hawk go, and it does well for 20 years, and then towards the end of its life, it has some, what would we call it, aches and pains, or on the Beverly Hillbillies, it was a rheumatiz. So they would have some problems, probably. They wouldn't have to, but due to those prior injuries. As far as memory loss, you know, pigeons, they tell me, pigeon guys, and that race pigeons said pigeons remember forever. They remember a route. They have no problem with that whatsoever. Chickadees are memory geniuses. Their brain grows so that they can remember where they hide all the seeds. Parrots have extremely long memories. So if they do get memory loss, it's probably not what we all think of, you know, dementia, Alzheimer's, or something like that. It's probably not. So if they have memory loss, it might be from a stroke, an illness, or something. However, I will say when I go into nursing homes and things, they have aviaries there. And if you go in there, they have these little zebra finches. They're just ubiquitous in those aviaries. And it happens, they have kind of an odd sort of memory loss. And I was in Science magazine. I don't remember what year or month or anything, but they talked about these little grayish birds will forget their courtship songs and other sounds at distinct times as if their brain papers right over them. So they sing and they get the courtship out of the way, and then they say, what was it I used to sing? I don't remember that. And so they just don't need it anymore, so it covers it up. Is that memory loss? I suppose it is in a way, but not like we think about it. And Lily asked about what birds would eat a bee. The one that we think of, and when I was a kid, a lot of people called them bee birds. We don't get them here. They don't nest here, but we see them every year somewhere around here. And they're called summer tanagers, these beautiful red birds, and they love eating bees and wasps. Scarlet tanagers that we do get here will eat some bees. There are bee eaters, but we don't have them here. And, of course, with the name of bee eater, you have to eat bees as part of your job. A blue jay will eat a bee. Mockingbirds will eat bees. A number of our flycatchers will eat bees. So we do have a few, I wouldn't say a huge amount of birds that prey on bees, and we don't have any that make bees their emphasis, their main diet plan. Carl in Motown asked about the bioluminescence, and Carl said it was petunias with a gene from a bioluminescent mushroom, and the buds They glow green. You can see them on the internet. He said they're beautiful to see. Vicki LaRoon sent me a thing from the Boise Public Radio saying you can watch your garden glow with new genetically modified bioluminescent petunias. And I couldn't remember. I was at the Master Gardeners thing in Mankato, and they mentioned it, and boy, I didn't write it down and had a swing and a miss. I had that memory thing like the zebra finches. I just covered it over with paper, and I couldn't remember, so thank you for letting me know. I wouldn't have guessed petunias. I had all other kinds of thoughts in my mind of flowers, and petunia was not one of them. Dwayne Swenson of Waseca saw an eastern screech owl in his wood duck box, and they will indeed use them. Dean Musing sent me some photos of bluebirds by a nest box in his yard. Also a photo of a red squirrel and trumpeter swans. On my drive to Fargo and back, folks, I went up one day and came back the next. So it's a, I don't know, five and a half hour drive, depending on which way I go and how good the traffic behaves. I saw trumpeter swans anywhere there was a little pond. There were trumpeter swans. They were just everywhere. And it was pretty cool to see them everywhere. Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson is with the Northland Community Preservation Association. And they're preserving that community that's between St. Peter and Gaylord. He asked where red-winged blackbirds go. Well, they follow routes Mike called flyways, with individuals often returning to the same place year after year. You know how it is. You like a place, you say, well, you know, we should go somewhere else, but it's so nice there. Why would we go anywhere else? So we go back to the same place. The males return first, and they return here because they need to set up territory and then get ready to impress the females who arrive later. The females, they don't have to be in a hurry because they know wherever they go, there'll be males waiting there and attempting to impress them. And by November, Mike, the most red wings have left. They've left Minnesota, and they've headed to various parts in southern U.S. for the winter. And again, they go to where they've gone before because things worked out there. Red Bushman, he's also of Northland, asked about what impact the eagles are having on loons, and this would be bald eagles. Oh, loons, you know, if you think a loon's a huge bird, and we don't want to mess with them because they have this dagger-like bill, but they face a wide range of threats. They get mortality from lead tackle poisoning, avian malaria, entanglement in monofilament fishing lines. But the loon chicks that have limited diving skills and the eggs are vulnerable to eagles. Yeah, we never think about eagles eating eggs, but why wouldn't they? Everything eats eggs. Don Johnson, another one from Northland, asks where the meadowlarks are. Both eastern and western meadowlarks inhabit roadsides, grasslands, croplands, weedy fallow fields, mixed grasslands and shrubs. The western prefers drier grasslands. The eastern favors moister habitats. And I said moister. And I know there's a lot of people just, the word moist causes shivers to run up and down their spine. It's a word that some people just, ooh, moist. So anyway, that's where you find eastern. So you probably don't go looking for eastern meadowlarks if you don't like moist. But like many grassland species, the decline of the meadowlark is attributed to habitat loss and degradation. The loss of family farms contributes because the family farm was a perfect place for meadowlarks. Meadowlarks nest on the ground, so any disturbances of roadsides and other covers by mowing, spraying, burning, tillage, grazing, what else? ATV usage. Anything during the peak nesting months, which are May, June, and July, lowers production significantly. Raccoons and feral cats and other things that hunt on the ground will also knock their numbers way down. The eastern has a simple, clear, slurred whistle, while the western song has a musical, bubbling, flute-like quality. And the males commonly use fence posts as perches while singing. And they look like they're wearing a cardigan shirt, sweater, and there they're singing. And it's just, I guess everybody who's heard them and recognized what they were and then saw them maybe while they were singing, it's one of those things you don't forget. You can still see that kind of plump little bird on a fence post singing away. And their song is meant to cut through the wind of the prairies. So when I was a kid driving down the road with the windows down, that song would come right into the car and travel down the road with us. So they are they're just incredible birds, and I long to hear more of them. I saw one here near my home, oh gosh, a couple days ago. So we still get them here. We just don't get like we used to. We used to, folks had cows and they had horses and they had all these kind of things that were out in pasture, free range, so to speak. So that was a good habitat for the meadowlarks. And now we've gone a little bit more corn and soybeans, more monoculture, mm-hmm. and that is not the best habitat for a meadowlark. So we just don't see as many, and more's the pity. It'd be nice to have them around. They're good company.
Say, Al, I have observed a lot of butterflies lately, and one of our listeners weighed in, and he said, there are dozens of medium-sized black and orange butterflies on my plum tree blossoms this year. Is that unusual? And I've been seeing a lot of the black and orange wing, smaller butterflies all around my yard, too. So is it their time to hatch, or what's the deal with them? And why are they seeing them right now? Is it unusual to see so many?
You know, it seems early every year, unless they're a monarch butterfly, and then it seems like they're late coming back. But the ones that we're seeing, and I see them in my yard, and when they're flying, they look all black till they land, and they are red admiral butterflies. And they're just, I think they're just beautiful. And seeing a butterfly at this time of year, and I would add that I am seeing some of our friends, the cabbage butterfly, the little white one, and I saw a sulfur butterfly, which is the yellow ones, which I typically don't see until probably the end of April, into the first part of May. But I saw one out here by my compost pile and seemed to be enjoying itself on a beautiful day. But the red admiral butterfly, I guess we'd probably call it a medium size. It has a wingspan here. I'm going to hold my thumb and forefinger again because that a wingspan of maybe an inch and, I don't know, 3/4 to 3 inches. So they are such beautiful, beautiful little butterflies, and they make wonderful, wonderful company. How they get here, you know, there's Minnesota has a lot of butterflies, and they say. Some say the red admiral, what the question mark, morning cloak, Compton's tortoiseshell, both the tortoiseshells, Compton's and Milbert's, I think the other one is, that they hibernate under loose bark and hollow trees and logs and things. Others say that these little guys, little red admirals, they migrate up here, so they come from further south. I don't care how they get here. I'm just so happy to have them. I know the sulfurs and the red admirals, they hatch out here, so we usually don't see them real early. And for folks with gardens, even though nothing is growing now, you're usually not real happy to see those beautiful little white cabbage butterflies because they like to lay their eggs on some of our produce, and we get those little green worms that just eat everything. They're they're wonderful eaters. My mom would say, well, there's a good eater right there, because she liked people that ate a lot. So they are good eaters. But yeah, it seems to be a good year for the Red Admiral, and just wonderful seeing them all. They're one of my favorites, because I see them at this time of year, pretty much every year. And I'm just happy for their company. And I'm ready to see all kinds of other ones. I saw some morning cloaks also early. But the Red Admiral, they like the edge of moist woods and again, and in gardens. And their population changes a lot each year. So they're known to have large numbers one year and then very few the next year. So they have explosions of them. And they like stinging nettles. So if you want to attract Red Admiral females, they lay their eggs on those nettles in May. And then the larvae feed on the nettles. And the adults would emerge in late June. And then we probably get another one here in September. And then again, I think the main belief is that they hibernate through the winter. So I'm guessing the ones that we get here are the ones that have hibernated. So we're seeing them now coming out and saying, hey, it's nice out.
Do you know what else is coming out, Al? Mosquitoes and flies and little black bugs. Because I was gardening down at the lakeshore over the weekend, and I'm like, as it started to get dusk, mosquitoes. And I said, oh, already too early, because we've been sort of spoiled over the last couple of years. When it's been dry, we haven't had nearly as many. But I don't know if I'm predicting a fierce year, but I felt like it was too early for them yet.
Yeah, that's another one. It's no matter when they come, it's always too early. And then when we don't get them, we think, boy, we should have mosquitoes. It's, something's wrong. It's just not right. Yeah, I think we'll have a tick year, and I'm hoping, boy, I got my fingers crossed and I'm wrong, but I think with the kind of winter we had, maybe we'll have more ticks too, which isn't a good thing. The dandelions, for those who are concerned, seem to be doing well, so it's nice to see them. The rhubarb is shooting up, so that's a wonderful thing to see. Our various colored violets that grow in the lawn, they are just blossoming like crazy, so it's nice to see them. I step on them every day because I can't walk anywhere else, and they just seem to take over the lawn this time of year. A listener asked, is the bigger eagle I'm seeing a golden eagle or a bald eagle? You know, the two species are about the same size. I know there's all kinds of things online that says that the golden eagle dwarfs the bald eagle in size, and the golden eagle's hauling off a mountain goat or something, but they're about the same size. So if you saw them both flying, you wouldn't be able to say, wow, that one is so much bigger than the other one. They're the same. But the females are larger than the males. So if you see two of them together, sometimes you can see, because it could be a noticeable size difference. If you can see the legs, and I know that's not always easy to see the legs, but the legs of golden eagles are feathered to the foot. And the bald, because they want warm feet. The bald eagles have featherless yellow ankles, because they're dipping into water. They don't want to get wet feet. Goldens frequent forested and grassland landscapes, often away from lakes, rivers, and coastlines. And bald eagles, we see them everywhere, I know, but they're typically found near open, fish-filled waters. And both species they're fond of carrion. Juvenile bald eagles, and this is probably the bigger one you're seeing, juvenile bald eagles are brown. They're larger than adults, because when they're young, they have longer wing and tail feathers. And sometimes it can make them look much, much bigger than an adult. But I'm going to guess, this is from Fairmont, so I'm going to guess that it's likely a juvenile bald eagle you're seeing. And I hope I'm right. That's what we do. We go through life as a man, anyway. We just say something. We say, "Well, I hope I'm right." Especially when we're young males, we just, because that was guys. You remember back when we knew everything? You know, we just say stuff, and we'd say, "Boy, I hope I'm right on that." We probably didn't even say, "Boy, I hope I'm right." We just didn't pay any attention. So it is a rainy, rainy day, and man, I just, you know, the thunder was loud. I just always hope for a lot of nice, gentle rain and nothing else that comes along with all this stuff. So it's that time of year, and we should. I did a little happy dance this morning when it's raining. So yeah, it's just, and I know during like at midnight we'd got a tenth of an inch or something, but we've got quite a bit since then, so that is nice. Somebody said, "Have you ever heard of a Canada geese nesting in a bald eagle nest?"
Oh,
yes, I have.
Really?
And if you go, there's one in a bald eagle nest in the Decorah area. And if you go to raptorresource.org, that's where you find the bald eagle bird cams and everything down in Decorah. And one will pop up and it'll say goose cam. And if you hit on that, it'll show a live nesting Canada goose in a bald eagle nest way up in a tree. So, and if you're a Canada goose, how do you ever think, you know what, we should just move to a bald eagle nest? What do you think, hon? And then we don't have to worry about everything down here on the ground. Well, Katie Jacobson of Albert Lea asked, what to do about a robin fighting with a window?
Uh-oh.
You know, yeah, robins, when they pair up, they claim the area, and they're going to defend it. So when this male, it's probably a male, although females will do it, spots another male, and it's something called a chasing fight ensues. So the dominant male gets the mate, the nesting location, the territory, the area's food. He gets everything, the big bonanza, the cornucopia. While your window, Katie, is acting as a mare and robin's territorial, he instinctively attacks rivals in the breeding territory, making an enemy of his image, of his own image. And the real robin would leave, but the reflection remains. And the real robin, he's persistent and stubborn. He continues to attack. If you want the robin to stop, you need to block the image, put a piece of cardboard, black nylon screen, painter's cloth, plastic cling on the outside of the window where the bird is attacking. Soaping the window works. I always say it'll cause Martha Stewart to shudder, but she's not going to be visiting you probably. And you only need it till a shadow boxing robin thinks its worthy adversary has departed. Covering the inside of the window might enhance the reflection, and forget about using plastic owls or fake snakes. They don't work. They look pretty cool, but they don't work. So
see,
thanks, Katie.
I've got an email from our friend John in New Ulm, Almost Comedy. We had a Burger King and a Dairy Queen. If we had a Jack in the Box burger place with a 10 and a 9 and we're playing cards, I think it would be a full house.
I think you're right.
We
don't have.
He just says, "I hope you have a good memory and a no regret card. Till next time, have a good day and a better tomorrow, John."
Good. Oh, thank you, John. Yeah, we don't get Jack in the Box.
No,
I don't know how far north they come, but we don't have them here, so they don't know that we need them. We have a lot of fast food places, so we're probably all right on that. Hey, boy, thanks everybody for sitting on the front porch with us. You know, I'm not a Herkler Dirkler. To Herkle Dirkle, it's a Scottish term meaning to lie in bed or lounge around when one should be up and about. I was up early and gadding about the countryside when I walked into a noisy convenience store in Nebraska. And I was reminded that music comes out of everything today. No matter where you go, there's some music coming out of something.
True.
Would you like a pickle card, said the friendly cashier. I thought she was asking me if I wanted a baseball card featuring a picture of a dill pickle with a statistics, or of the catcher who had 5 seasons in major leagues. Pickles Dillhoffer. What a great name. Pickles Dillhoffer. His best year was as a backup catcher for the St. Louis Cardinals in 1920. Well, the pickle card had nothing to do with baseball. Pickle cards are better known as pull tabs to the rest of the country. This uniquely Nebraska origin of the term pickle card comes from the days when they were sold illegally in taverns and bars in Nebraska, and the cards were kept in a large empty pickle jar, which could easily be hidden when the situation demanded. So, boy, for all you out there that are not Herkler Dirklers, I wish you a winning pickle card today. And thanks for listening. Do something wild today. Get out there and look at a bird. Remember, Heartland is well worth driving past. Thank you, Karen. I'm glad you got some of your garden in. Yeah. I'll just be growing like a foot in this rain.
It will. Well, hey, it's always great to have you on. Yeah, we'll chat with you next week, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.